You're listening to Surrounded by History, a podcast of the Blue Earth County Historical Society. Produced by Radio Mankato with your host, Historical Society Executive Director Jessica Potter. And now, Surrounded by History.
Hello and welcome to Surrounded by History. I'm your host, Jessica Potter, with the Blue Earth County Historical Society. Joining me today is Radio Mankato's Jeff Lang. Each week, this program explores the history all around us, the history in plain sight. In this segment of Surrounded by History, we will dig into the history and the stories behind one of our prominent historic buildings. Our community celebrates the history of our built environment with many houses and commercial buildings listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Today, we will explore the history of a local landmark, Mankato's Carnegie Library. Many people know of this historic and iconic building either from the distinct architecture features or because they've checked out a book here or have experienced an art exhibit. Let's jump in and be surrounded by history. So to start out, we need to say where the Carnegie Library is, right? So the Mankato Carnegie Library has stood at 120 South Broad Street in downtown Mankato for 120 years.
I did not know it was 120 years. Mm-hmm. I knew it's been there for a long time.
Yeah.
It's a very – I feel like the street fits it well. Yeah. With the trees growing up the way they are in that block, I think it just looks very nice there.
Broad Street has always been that picturesque tree-lined street.
Yeah.
So I agree. But Mankato's public library, the idea of a public library, the history goes back some years before the Carnegie was built. Before the turn of the century, Mankato had nearly 10,000 residents, with only school or college libraries or private book collections. On April 7, 1894, the Mankato City Council unanimously passed a resolution creating the Mankato Free Public Library. The mayor appointed a 9-member board to be responsible for research and recommendations. Although tax funds were not available for another 14 months, the board was allowed to draw $1,500 from the city treasury to begin operations, and private donations provided another $348. Now, I know that doesn't sound like a lot of money, but when you put in like an inflation calculator, that's a significant amount of money.
It was 1894.
Yeah, it's a significant amount of money that's being drawn mm-hmm. from the treasury to start this library. So it's already a big investment by the community. So the first library was located on the second floor of the YMCA.
No, we already had a YMCA then.
We had a YMCA, and it was not where it stands today.
Okay.
It was actually located at 313 and 315 South Front Street. So where this gets to be put is somewhat near the post office.
Okay.
Okay. So it's kind of in that area.
I didn't know when did YMCA. That's not this podcast. But when did YMCA come around? That's really early. I did not assume that.
Yeah. No, it's been around for a long time. But maybe we'll have to dig into it a little bit more.
All right.
Minnie McGraw was appointed the librarian on January 5th, 1894, at a salary of $25 a month. Her first task was to catalog the collection of 2,000 books. Some of them were purchased and some were donated. The library opened its doors just 1 month later, and on that first day, 62 library patrons registered to check out books, and 54 volumes were withdrawn. Within the first 2 weeks, 637 books were circulating around Mankato. The community was definitely hungry for a library. The book collection grew quickly, with approximately $100 per month spent on new books and collected book fines of about $10 per month. With the growing collection, it soon became evident that the library space at the YMCA was inadequate, so the collection was moved to 132 South Front Street, which is today near the Civic Center.
Okay.
So, the Carnegie Library, let's talk about that. In 6 short years, in 1901, remember we just got started as a library in 1894.
Right.
So, in 1901, the library board passed a resolution to accept a $40,000 gift from steel industrialist and philanthropist Andrew Carnegie to construct a library building. Now, I just have to say, I did do an inflation calculator on that. We're talking like $1 million.
Wow.
I know. It's crazy amount of money. $40,000 seems – it's still a big amount of money for us now, but think about that at 1901. Mm-hmm. Some conditions accompanied Carnegie's financial offer. The city had to demonstrate a need for a public library and provide a building site. In addition, the city was required to set aside $4,000 a year, 10% of the gift, for the library's upkeep. Finally, and most importantly, services provided by the library were to be free to all citizens. The New York City architecture firm of Jardine, Kent, and Jardine was hired to design the library building, despite protests by the Western League of Architects, who advocated a local architect. With some modifications, the library board accepted the plan, and the local contracting firm of J.B. Nelson & Company, they were based out of North Mankato, were hired to construct the building at 120 South Broad Street, a site that was provided by the city of Mankato. In addition, the stone, cement, lime, and brick used in the building were all locally produced. Mankato's library features the Renaissance Revival design style, which was a departure from the usual columned neoclassic style of most Minnesota's Carnegie buildings. Construction began, and the library's cornerstone was put in place on July 1902. Okay. Now, the history geek in me has to take us on a little side trip, okay?
Okay.
Because once I put all of this together, I was just like, oh my goodness. Okay, so July 2nd, 1902. At this same time, the Blue Earth County Historical Society was the leading force behind the Mankato Semi-Centennial, which is the first 50 years of Mankato being a town.
Right.
The five-day event was held in July. So the Historical Society during the Mankato Semi-Centennial created exhibits of curiosities and relics at the Ben Pei Livery Barn, and papers were written and read to commemorate the teachers, businessmen, churches, pioneers who had founded the city and Blue Earth County. In addition to the ceremonial placing of the cornerstone of the new library, the community celebration included a parade and a picnic at Sibley Park with an evening banquet. The grand finale was a fireworks display on the 4th of July. So while the Mankato Semi-Centennial is happening, the cornerstone to the new Carnegie Library is being set. Mm-hmm. And so it's all part of this big community celebration. And the Semi-Centennial was basically the founding of the Blue Earth County Historical Society, which we've learned about in a previous podcast.
That's right.
So I totally geeked out on this. And Minnie McGraw, who was the city's librarian, was also the secretary of the newly founded Blue Earth County Historical Society Board.
Perfect.
I just love it when different stories start coming together and overlapping.
We've learned that from so many stories where these different guys and women are parts of so many different parts of the community.
Yeah.
And it is today, but it's just fun to read about and hear how people get their hands in everything.
Oh, and I was reading about them in different contexts, and all of a sudden they just came together, and I was so excited. Okay. Back to the construction of Mankato's Carnegie Library. Okay, so once the cornerstone was placed, construction proceeded rapidly until October 10th, 1902. Peter Karlstrom, one of the construction workers on the library, was cementing on the roof. He noticed a crack in the cement that had been laid that afternoon. That's not normal. He ran down the ladder and told the carpenters that they had better get out. But before they could answer, an immense steel beam, the main support of the roof of the building's left wing, collapsed at one end. With it came tons of bricks and mortar and many smaller crossbeams. Eight workmen were injured, and sadly one, William O'Connell, died from his injuries received by falling material. The afternoon before the accident, the men were working on the arches that were to support the roof. The north wall had been wet ever since it was put up. The numerous rains and the dampness from the freshly laid brick arches keeping it damp. So this wall is just constantly being wet and wetted. And so there was nothing really supporting when they were putting these beams in. On the day of the accident, O'Connell was putting up the ceiling joists that held the upper floor. There were two iron beams that supported the roof, and the ends of the beams were set in the walls. An investigation later revealed that two of the four heavy beams in the architect's plans had been removed out of the plan to save on costs. Or there's question that perhaps lighter weight beams had been substituted. That was still pretty unclear. In addition, the roof collapse was due to the placing of the chimney flue too near the steel beam that gave way and a wall that had never quite set up due to damp weather conditions. Needless to say, a combination of factors led to the collapse and the death of one worker.
Wow. Okay.
After the accident, construction resumed, and by the summer of 1903, the library moved into its new home, the one-story brick building named the Mankato Public Library and Reading Room, sits on a raised basement of limestone. The Renaissance Revival style of the library is evident in the strong horizontal design of the building, emphasized with symmetrical, repeating, arched windows. Also, a large semicircle wing is located at the rear of the building. The main portion of the building is a flat roof rectangle with a central projecting entrance and with a carved limestone panel that reads Public Library and Reading Room. By the time it opened in its new location, over 2,000 residents had borrower's cards for a collection of over 9,000 books.
Wow.
I know, so they grew that collection and the impact pretty fast.
Yeah, they did.
Unique features of the new public library and reading room were the rotunda for the stacks or the bookshelves and the budget set aside for interior paint decoration. Artist Odin J. Owen, O-Y-E-N, a Norwegian immigrant who had trained in Chicago and established himself in La Crosse, Wisconsin, was commissioned to carry out the paintings. In 1904, Odin and his team worked for 5 or 6 weeks on a variety of projects at the new library. He painted an elaborate fresco around the skylight of the rotunda and above the checkout desk portraying 12 angels holding plaques on which are inscribed the names of 12 transcendental American writers, including John Greenleaf Whittier, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, and Noah Webster. Between the angels are oval medallions representing the zodiac. In addition, his firm painted all of the ceilings and walls in the main floors and added oak cornices to the main entrance, moldings in all the main rooms, and completed two murals, one in the front reading room and one in the children's room. Unfortunately, over time, the murals in that fresco have deteriorated and were eventually painted over.
Oh.
So you're probably wondering, why am I sharing this wonderful little tidbit? Well, this is really interesting. According to the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, the Odin J. Owen firm, during its heyday from 1902 to 1917, was in demand across the upper Midwest, employing between 15 and 25 artisans.
Wow.
Specializing in buildings such as churches, hotels, and clubs, hospitals, libraries, courthouses, schools, theaters, and breweries. The firm is perhaps best known for the murals and paintings its artists produced for such buildings. This is off of their website. Among Owen's best-known works are the public libraries in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and Mankato, Minnesota. And the courthouses in La Crosse, Aberdeen, South Dakota, and Sibley, Iowa, and numerous theaters for the Finkelstein and Rubin chain. After Owen's death in 1926, the firm continued under the management of his brother Louis and son Leighton. But the Great Depression, coupled with changing tastes in the interior decoration, caused the business to fold a few years later.
Oh.
So I just thought that was really interesting that one of his most well-known and accomplished works was right here in Mankato, Minnesota, as part of the new Mankato Carnegie Library.
That is really cool.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
So a fun little tidbit. Had to throw that in to realize how special our Carnegie Library is and was.
And they didn't call anything Carnegie at first either, by the way, right?
Right.
So, I mean, you said it was just the Public Library and Reading Room.
It was the Mankato Public Library and Reading Room.
I look forward to learning more about how it changed its name then.
There we go. A little spot for a break. Welcome back to Surrounded by History. Today we're talking about the Mankato Carnegie Library. So I think that a good place to kind of like take a little side trip is to who was Andrew Carnegie?
Yes.
He was born in Scotland in 1835, and when he was 12 years old, he came to the United States with his parents. He started work as a telegraph operator for the Penn Railroad, and by the 1860s, I can't get over this, he had investments in railroads, railroad sleeping cars, bridges, and oil derricks.
Right after it.
Oh, after the Civil War, he turned his attention to ironworks in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. By 1889, Carnegie controlled U.S. steel production with the Pittsburgh's Carnegie Steel Company, which he sold to J.P. Morgan in 1901 for over, in 1901 valuation, for over $300 million. To form the basis of the U.S. Steel Corporation, which was a J.P. Morgan company. After selling Carnegie Steel, he surpassed John D. Rockefeller as the richest American for the next several of years.
Which drove Rockefeller crazy, by the way.
Uh-huh. Beginning in 1901, Carnegie set out to distribute his large fortune in Scotland, his home country, the UK, and the United States. Carnegie is quoted as saying, I absolutely love this quote, direct quote, "One should spend the first third of life getting educated, the next third making as much money as you can, and the last third giving it all away."
I like that.
End quote. During the last 18 years of his life, he gave away around $350 million, which roughly is about $5 billion in today's dollars.
Wow.
Almost 90% of his fortune he gave away to charities, foundations, and universities, with special emphasis on local libraries, education, and scientific research.
I like him a lot better just because of that.
I know. Isn't it cool?
Yeah.
Of course, we've been talking about Carnegie's contribution to libraries across the globe. It wasn't just in the United States or the UK. The first Carnegie Library was in Braddock, Pennsylvania, built in 1889 near a steel mill. A Carnegie Library represents the efforts of a local community to secure funding, select a site and design, and make an ongoing financial commitment to the future maintenance of the library. The Carnegie grant was to be used to construct the building, while the community was expected to provide a site and to tax itself at the annual rate of 10% of the grant amount for the purchase of books and for staff and upkeep of the library. Over 2,500 Carnegie libraries were constructed around the globe, with more than 1,500 located in the United States and 65 in Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
Minnesota was the eighth state, most populated state with the Carnegie Libraries.
Oh, wow.
Dick says number eight. The style of the building was chosen by the community, but had to be approved by Carnegie's office. All of the Carnegie Libraries had entry stairs, which symbolized a person's elevation by learning. Outside of the library, nearly all had a lamppost or a lantern, meaning enlightenment. And you will notice these features on the Mankato Carnegie Library, both of them, including another special Carnegie piece on the cornerstone located on the right-hand side of the facade of our Mankato Carnegie Library. The stone bears the representation of an open book and a Latin inscription that recalls the Genesis verse, "Let there be light," and there was light. I'm not going to say it in Latin. So the other interesting thing that I found about Carnegie is that he wrote many articles for magazines, mainly on labor issues. He wrote seven books, including his autobiography published posthumous in 1920. And in 1889, his article proclaiming the gospel of wealth called on the rich to use their wealth to improve society, expressed support for progressive taxation and an estate tax, and stimulated a wave of philanthropy. So a little bit more to understand about Andrew Carnegie and how we maybe came upon our own Mankato Carnegie Library. I slipped there. Mapleton has a Carnegie Library too.
They do. I did not know that. But now you say that, I've seen the building and it has raised stairs as well.
Yes, it does. Yep. It does. Which were nightmares for ADA accessibility.
I'm sure in the revamp of what had to be done after. Yeah.
Exactly. So now is probably a great spot to get back to Mankato's Carnegie Library and talk about some of those changes throughout the years. So in the early to mid 20th century, a lot of innovative things happened at the local libraries. A contract in 1921 with the Board of Education made the Mankato School Library a branch of the public library.
Okay.
Local schools began requesting library services, so a librarian was hired jointly with the schools. By 1936, the library furnished books to other rural schools at a charge of $10 per year. This cooperative venture set the stage for future interlibrary arrangements.
Wow.
Like an interlibrary loan. Late in the 1940s, the Carnegie Library building opened its doors to residents of Blue Earth County. You no longer had to just be a resident of Mankato to be able to use the library. Now in 1940, anybody in Blue Earth County could use it. The rural library system contract between the city of Mankato and Blue Earth County included all county residents and the towns of Mapleton and Lake Crystal, which had their own library buildings. So again, this interlibrary exchange started to happen. The county rented space in the basement of the building, and a county librarian was hired at $150 per month and allowed 4 cents per mile for deliveries. Most of the county schools sent representatives to the library to choose books for their students. As many as 64 rural public schools, along with 15 stations, were served. So the stations were kind of little home bases or little libraries within communities.
Okay.
So the 15 stations were in Garden City, Vernon Center, Amboy, Eagle Lake, Madison Lake, St. Clair, Pemberton, Sterling Center, Buford, Rapidan, Good Thunder, Butternut, Cambria, Lake Crystal, and Mapleton.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So kind of an interesting little concept, which I think kind of is a precursor of what's to come in the late 1950s. The bookmobile. The first bookmobile was purchased and took its first trip around Blue Earth County on November 4th, 1958.
Library on wheels.
So I think those stations were kind of a precursor of this library on wheels. At this time, the library not only lent books to patrons, but they also had an art lending program.
Oh, very cool.
So maybe another little foreshadowing of what's to come for the building, perhaps? In the mid-1960s, another concept came to play right here in Mankato, a regional library system, merging of the county and city library services. So we've already have them under one roof, but now they're looking at doing something a little bit more. Okay. They're going to merge them. Rather than sharing a building, they're actually going to merge them.
Which makes sense.
Right.
Putting all the Dewey Decimal systems together.
Exactly. Literally, they did. They merged their library book collections, each of them having 40,000 books once it was all merged together. They merged their card catalogs and everything. The Minnesota Valley Regional Library began its first year of operation in June of 1967. The Minnesota Valley Regional Library, headquartered in Mankato, became a reality when officials from Nicollet and Blue Earth counties, the cities of Mankato, North Mankato, and St. Peter decided to merge into this regional library concept. So there were member libraries as well, North Mankato, St. Peter, Lake Crystal, Mapleton, Amboy, Good Thunder, Vernon Center, St. Clair, Eagle Lake, and Butternut. And the bookmobile visited 27 locations around around Nicollet and Blue Earth counties.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's this, the whole thing is just like just, really coming together.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that's pretty cool to think about that all starting right here. And it started right out of that building, the Mankato Carnegie Library. So as you can imagine, if you're going to build a regional library, then you're probably going to outgrow that space.
Yeah.
So early in the 1970s, outgrowing the Carnegie and urban renewal was very much a thing at this time. These were both catalysts for the groundbreaking for a new regional library, which took place on April 14th, 1976. 1 year later, library services began in the new building, ushering a new era for the Carnegie. And all this time, you know, we kind of go back. All this time, it is not known as the Carnegie Library.
Right.
Okay. So, but the building was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1980, and it was purchased from the city of Mankato by the Mankato Area Arts Council in 1981.
Oh, all right.
And at this point, it is renamed the Carnegie Arts Center.
Very nice.
Which serves as a multi-purpose community art center that has operated from this location ever since.
That's cool.
So really, this is the first time it gets known as the Carnegie Library.
Right.
But I think culturally, we know of these specific types of libraries that were known as Carnegie Libraries.
I didn't until now.
Because
now
of the legacy.
I'm so smart, and I'm going to pull up to somebody now. We go someplace, like a small town. I'll go to Mapleton. And I'm going to look at somebody and go, you know what that says over in the corner there? I know it says Latin, but you know what that says? I got to read Latin. Let there be light. And there was light. That's what that says. I knew that. Did you know that? Oh, yeah.
Or you can tell them that the steps that go to the library was to be for what?
Elevating your education elevates you or whatever like that.
Yes.
And the lamp means enlightened.
Yes. Yeah. Pretty cool stuff, huh?
It's just stuff I happen to know.
So some really, really neat stuff to learn about one of our local landmarks, like the history of Andrew Carnegie and why he invested in libraries and in education and back. He gave back so much of his wealth back to the world, really.
He really did.
Pretty incredible story. So we hope you enjoyed today's program as we explored the rich history of a true local landmark, the Mankato Carnegie Library. All of the information we shared today comes from the archives of the Blue Earth County Historical Society. Thank you for joining us today. Until next time, we hope you see the history that surrounds you.
You've been listening to Surrounded by History, a podcast from the Blue Earth County Historical Society, produced by Radio Mankato. For more information on this and other topics, visit BlueEarthCountyHistory.com or stop by the Blue Earth County History Center at 424 Warren Street in Mankato. Thanks for listening to Surrounded by History.